Hello, nerds. Welcome to episode 3 of Nerds Be Heard podcast. I'm Matt, joined by my co-host, Charlie, as always. We're really excited to finally get into episode 3 and 4 of Falcon the Winter Soldier this week. Had a little hiatus due to the Easter holiday, but we're here. Got two episodes loaded and packed with all exciting content, action, character development, story enhancement, and a lot of new introductions. So much to unpack. I'm glad we actually had this hiatus. I think we got to see the cultural impact of some of these characters that it's been quite surprising, almost like Baby Yoda level surprising. So we'll get into that, but Charlie, you and I, again, as always, talking every single day, getting into the nerd news. What are you excited about that's been hitting the airwaves over the last couple of weeks?
Dude, there's been like so much going on between Star Wars and Marvel. I'm trying to even think since obviously, like you said, we've taken that few weeks off between Obi-Wan. The cast had been announced and that is going to start filming soon. The Bad Batch, which is the new animation show that's coming out for Star Wars. There's a lot of Spider-Man news. I'm really excited for the Obi-Wan. I think that cast is stacked and I'm just so pumped to have Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen. I don't really care about anyone else being in the show. It's just the fact that they got Ewan and then I'm really happy about Hayden Christensen. I mean, that was a big get. Like, he doesn't really do much anymore. So to have him reprise the role and you know he's totally going to be decked down in the Vader suit, I'm really, really pumped for that.
Is that by choice or by I guess reputation that he hasn't been doing a lot?
I personally think it's by choice. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say he's the greatest actor, but I also think he's a lot better than he gets credit for. Everyone just knows him as Anakin Skywalker. Some other works he's been in, he's actually can act. That's not his fault that the dialogue, and I mean, I love the prequels, but you know, a lot of people don't and they go straight to the cheesy dialogue and whatnot. I mean, he did what he was given.
The hate on the prequels, we're gonna get into this a lot when we go into Star Wars universe, because first off, what makes me so excited is there's a newfound love and appreciation for the sequels that has come to light over the last couple of years. I think mostly due to the hatred of the sequels.
So, it's like history is repeating itself.
Right. And it's funny because then, you know, I bet you there's a newfound appreciation for when the next phase comes out where people start, you know, digging Kylo Ren and this kind of sequel trilogy and everything that was done. I think personally, people are going to go back and appreciate Rian Johnson's impact on the Star Wars universe. I think you and I appreciated the second installment of the
Last Jedi
trilogy more so than anybody else. You and I left the theater saying that was great. And what we liked about it is what people hated about it. We liked that, hey, this isn't more of the same. It expanded on the universe in a way that made you dream again, made you think outside the box. Like, Star Wars doesn't have to be cookie cutter. It doesn't have to have the same formulaic approach. What made it so great in the first place was that everything was new and transcending every movie that came out. So personally, I think there will be a newfound appreciation. But back to the prequels, I don't need a newfound appreciation. I love the prequels. I mean, that's my childhood right there. We were Star Wars fans because our parents passed it down to us. But then in our lifetime, you had the prequel trilogy. And by far and away, Obi-Wan Kenobi is the best character in Star Wars canon. In my opinion, I used to read books. They had like spin-off books of him, adolescent novels. Some of my favorite books. Ewan McGregor, perfect casting. So to see those two in particular come back and for them to already pretty much confirm that they're going to try to top that duel of the fates fight sequence, I'm freaking excited. Wait,
it's funny you bring that up. Well, one thing too, Obi-Wan Kenobi obviously is one of the greatest characters of all time, and Ewan McGregor was probably the one part of the prequels that was universally beloved. So this is already like a home run out of the park by bringing him back. But I know some people, there's been a lot of debate whether people are excited to see another epic battle, because in A New Hope, you're kind of led to believe that that is kind of the first time that they've really seen each other since that battle. I mean, obviously it can be up for interpretation, you know, they can make it work. I'm personally excited to see an epic battle, but I know other people maybe not so. So I'm assuming you are excited.
I'm so excited. And to me, I think everyone's overreaching with that. What Darth Vader says in A New Hope is, I haven't felt a presence like this since, and then he stops. So you don't know what since was. It doesn't mean it was the duel of the fate. It could have been since 5 years ago. It could have been since, you know, to me, giving us the, what every fan wanted was to ultimately see Anakin become Darth Vader and not just shout at the sky, no, in the deepest voice possible, but instead see him in action as Darth Vader. And we didn't get that until Rogue One, and people loved Rogue One. Honestly, it was a great flick, but people really loved it for that 5 minutes or less of screen time of Darth Vader coming down the hallway.
That was amazing.
Yeah. So if you're going to tell me that I'm going to get some of that, and I'm going to, and with the combined prequel over the top lightsaber duels that we had, I'm stoked. I'm stoked. And by the way, I'm going to go on a tangent because we need to go on a tangent because we're nerds and this stuff gets us excited. Lightsabers. We're talking about lightsaber duels. What did we hear this week about
that? That's another good news. Yeah. So the Disney parks, they had, little investors meeting and for the press and whatnot. And at the end of it, the guy who's in charge of parks legitimately whipped out a hilt that was basically a real life lightsaber. I mean, I have one of the ones that you can get from Galaxy's Edge, but I mean, you hook something into it. It's really cool. But this legitimately had the actual saber pop out, and everyone in the audience was like, holy crap, like what is going on? I'm pissed there hasn't been any, that footage has not leaked online. Like, I really want to see it. And everyone was like, this was not a trick, this was not something that was edited, like this is coming to the parks. And I think that's going to be amazing. I think it's going to make its debut in the hotel that they're making at Galaxy's Edge in Orlando. So there's going to be, it's essentially like a docked cruise ship that you're going to have an experience that you can go for 2 days, and you're living in the world the entire time. You're only doing Star Wars stuff. I think that's where they're going to debut. I mean, it's Disney. They're going to sell them as well. So I'm
budgeting. I'm expecting that they come out and charge stupid money, and I will take my funds from my future children's college to buy myself a freaking.
It's funny. I was thinking about like how much will this actually cost, because they're going to, I mean, Disney doesn't, they want to make everything. If you're going to Disney, you're spending a lot of money regardless. They know that, and people save up. But I mean, to build the lightsaber they have now, which is pretty high quality. Now it's not this technology that costs $200, and to buy all those high quality ones there, they're around that price. I don't see it being, I think it's going to be around like $500.
I think it's gonna be like $899.99.
It'll be interesting if they're like, "Hey, are we trying to push this product a lot, or do they just know every Star Wars fan is gonna buy it regardless of the price?" Which is probably what it is.
If you have a real life lightsaber, you bet your bottom.
I mean, to me, that's worth the price. I mean, I'll buy it, but
right. I texted you if it's $10,000, I'm buying it.
I know you will. I don't think it's going to be that much money, luckily for everybody. But
I said to my wife this week, I said, did you see? And she's like, what? I was like, there's a real life lightsaber. She goes, like, what are you talking about? I'm like, it's real. It works. And she's just like, okay. I was like, so when I pay like $10,000 for this, you can't get mad. And she just shook her head, but she understands. She understands me. She gets my nerdisms, and I got the wife's permission.
So. Yeah, you got to make your way to Galaxy's Edge. It's fun.
I will head south and take a look at that probably this summer. So, more news though. I want to talk about Spider-Man.
Yeah,
you know, we disagree here, but to me, Tobey Maguire is Spider-Man. Okay.
Yeah. No, I totally disagree.
And for me, here's why. Because as a kid, sitting my ass in a movie theater at the front row, because it's the only seat I could get, and watching Spider-Man 1 was a life-changing experience. I was always a nerd. I was always into, you know, Batman and Star Wars and all these things. But Spider-Man brought the superhero genre to a new level. And ultimately, I know they say Iron Man was the spark that lit the fire of the MCU. But without Spider-Man, Iron Man never would have happened. So
I totally agree.
To me, Spider-Man 1 and 2, let's pretend Spider-Man 3 never happened, are two game-changing movies that changed the cinematic experience and gave us what we get to experience today. So I have a very soft spot for those movies. And these rumors about a multiverse in the Spider-Man realm on this, that they just wrapped filming, where Tom Holland and Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield could somehow be in the same room is probably the most exciting news I've ever heard in the superhero universe. It gets me so pumped.
Yeah. So to go off of that, I mean, I love those movies. I have the same feelings as you do. Like seeing those in the movie theater, I remember it was like epic. It was the first between that and X-Men, like they were the big new Marvel properties that you got to see first time on screen. I'm a huge Tom Holland guy. I think he is the ultimate Peter Parker, but doesn't take away anything from Toby. He was the original. And now to go off of all three of them being in the new Spider-Man movie, I think there's been a lot of news, whether Toby's going to be in it, whether he's not going to be in it. I think Andrew Garfield's 100% in it. I want to say Tobey Maguire is, but I've been reading a lot. He's been kind of supposedly a huge diva asking like for Mad Bank more than Tom and Andrew, basically, which I get it. I mean, he kind of has, you know, he chooses his roles wisely these days. He's kind of just chilling, but I now think he's not going to be in the next Spider-Man. What I think is going to happen is he will be in it, but he will be in the post-credit scene, which is going to lead into Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, which is being directed by Sam Raimi, who, for all those who don't know, he directed the original Spider-Man trilogy with Tobey Maguire. So I think he's going to play a part in that. And then because that is going to be the movie in the MCU that really opens up the multiverse. Like WandaVision, Kevin Feige has kind of said this is the trilogy. It's WandaVision, the new Spider-Man movie, and then the new Doctor Strange movie. And that, I think, is where we're going to see tons of different characters. I mean, it's rumored to have all different versions of all the characters you love. Like Tom Cruise is rumored to be Iron Man. John Krasinski is rumored to be Captain America. The list goes on and on. I feel like Ed Norton may come back as Bruce Banner. I mean, it's going to be like unreal. They're totally gonna shit all over DC. I'm sorry, but the Flash movie is gonna have nothing on this movie, and they're obviously gonna hit the theaters before.
Okay, but before we go saying that, all right, all it takes is two words and one voice to make them on par.
Well, and Michael Keaton?
I'm Batman.
Yeah, well, he's also now supposedly being...
Yeah, he's bailing.
Yeah, he's pulling a Toby. If Toby's actually not in, it's just like...
Well, Keaton's being a little bit more political in his... Yes. And you know what? I can't, you know, Keaton is my childhood, so I'm not even gonna go there. But so silly. All right, come on. This is easy money, easy payday, and a great way to pay homage to what made you a successful movie star. He needs to do that. And then, you know, from a Toby perspective, look, I don't know. There's a couple things that make me think he'll be in it. Maybe it is just post credits, but I think it's more than that, because the leaks of, like, there's a couple things. There's the rap gift, which had Andrew Garfield's
Spider-Man. I think he's 100% in it.
And Andrew Garfield, love him or hate him, as an actor, probably, in my opinion, was probably the best actor. Now, maybe didn't do the best job with the role, but the best actor role of Peter Parker. He's a phenomenal actor and the only Spider-Man actor thus far. Oh, that's a lie. I was going to say the only Spider-Man actor thus far to make me tear up, but are you kidding me?
Come on.
Yeah, Infinity War, come on. Never mind. Tom Holland, definitely. Yeah,
see, Tom Holland's better than you think, Matt.
I like Tom Holland. The original always beats, if the original's best, you know, that's why I love Michael Keaton. I guess the other thing that leaked was that one of the guys that got tagged in, like, the rap post of one of the principal photographers on the movie tagged Tobey Maguire's body double from the Spider-Man trilogy. And so that was like, wait a second, why is Tobey Maguire's body double there? So again, it could have been just a post-credit sequence.
So it's funny you say that. So I read that as well, and I have a theory, because, as you know, I mean, I've been telling you all along, he's definitely in this movie, but now, from what I've been reading, he's been playing hardball, and all the scenes that were shot with his body double were him being masked. So they want Tobey Maguire to be in this movie. I think that is the plan, but that doesn't always work. I think there's going to come a point where, like, we're not paying you that type of money. You're not the star of the movie, unfortunately. I think that's what this is coming down to. And they know at the end of the day, he's not the MCU Spider-Man. What I think is happening here as well, Disney and Sony have made a deal where, you know, they can use the Spider-Man character in their movies, but the multiverse is going to open up this world where it's allowing them to exist in the Sony universe now.
Yeah.
And then the MCU. I actually think whether it's Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield, they're going to come back as Spider-Man for their movies. Yeah. Tom Holland is not going to be in their movies. He may make cameos, but he is not going to be the Spider-Man in those movies.
Well, they're talking Spider-Man 4 with Sam Raimi.
Yes, which that is another rumor.
And so it could launch into that.
Which could be Spider-Man 4, though, for the MCU as well, the people are saying.
Right.
It's like they're both would be Spider-Man 4.
Yeah, it's interesting. what is it? How could it? And then the one thing not too many people are talking about just yet, but, like, how does Venom tie into all this, right? You've got one of the greatest actors to ever walk this earth, and I know you don't always agree with that, but you got...
I have still not seen that movie. I refuse to watch that movie.
I thought it was going to be horrible, and you know me and CGI, so they don't mix well. He did such a good job keeping that movie so entertaining. I was so pleasantly surprised. Now, put into context, I only watched it in theaters. I never watched it again because I didn't feel the need to, so it wasn't like the greatest movie ever. But it wasn't a pile of crap, and that's what I thought it was going to be. So I have excitement surrounding how do they make to me, the most exciting thing they could have done is, okay, keep Sony within Sony, bring Toby back, and somehow figure out a way to fix whatever the heck that was in Spider-Man 3 and pretend it never happened. I don't think anyone would be that mad if you just pretend. They just did it with Halloween. They brought Michael Myers back and pretended that all the movies in between the first one and this one didn't happen. And
no, well, that's what's great about comic books. You can do that. I mean, people won't care. Yeah, I agree.
So make Tom Hardy Venom up against Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, and now you can redeem yourself in Spider-Man 3, but it will never happen because Sam Raimi doesn't like the Venom character, and that's why he probably made that Spider-Man 3 a steaming pile of crap.
I've also heard he's not even that good of, like, him and Toby don't necessarily get along.
Well, Toby, like, Toby,
they have a good working relationship because they're professionals, but I don't think either of them are like, oh my god, we want to work with each other again.
Right. Fair. I don't think, I don't think Toby gets along with too many people other than Leonardo DiCaprio. Let's be real. He got the Nick Carraway role in Gatsby because he's Leo's best friend. So,
which is wild. I don't envision them being like as tight as they are.
Oh man. but the so then tons of stuff around the Spider-Man universe, and I think we're gonna have to really keep an eye out for any of these kind of Easter eggs out there on the internet, because I think a lot more is going to come to light from that. Yes, it will feed into Doctor Strange. Yes, the multiverse will be a thing. But, you know, we should get into some predictions when we start reviewing episode 3 and 4 on other characters that might get introduced over the next two episodes of Falcon and Winter Soldier, and how they might play a role in this whole thing as well, because there's a lot of excitement around that. You and I talked about some really exciting prospects. I think I'm a little skeptical because WandaVision, every week there were rumors that their big cameos would happen. They never did, but
I agree. I do want to get onto the Captain America, the Falcon and Winter Soldier, but that's why I'm a little iffy now about the whole Spider-Man stuff. Like, I really, really want Toby to be in it. I thought he was going to be, but I loved WandaVision, but like you're saying, there were so many rumors and I was really let down that Evan Peters was not actually Quicksilver. Like, that was a huge, and that they gave him the name of Boner to be like a boner joke. Like, that just was so insulting to the fans, in my opinion.
It's a very simple thing to make the fans happy. It really is. And it doesn't have to be this huge shock, this huge surprise. Look at what happened with the Snyder Cut, right? Like,
yep.
It's not that hard. And sometimes maybe you should do some fan service. And I know MCU has done a lot of fan service, and a lot of times they really do throw you off. And it's not what you expected, and then it still blows you away, and it's amazing. So I give them credit for that. And that's what made them successful, is they're just original, and they've tied everything together so well. But, you know, God bless it. You own the X-Men now. If you don't give me Wolverine in a yellow costume with a mask, I'm going to jump Kevin off Feige, my roof.
The greatest producer of all time, will 100% do that. That is the... I know we're going off on a tangent, but that is the
single. This is ours. This is our podcast.
That was the worst thing that had ever been done in any of those. That's why those X-Men movies, they don't age well, especially the end. They're trash, in my opinion. And the fact that they never got Hugh Jackman to wear that costume is a travesty.
Yeah. Even after teasing it, when you open that
exactly
at the end of the Wolverine,
like, that is ridiculous. Like, the fans deserved more, and so did Hugh Jackman, quite frankly.
Yeah,
which I think he is going to be in Doctor Strange. In my opinion,
he said he would never return to the role, and Ryan Reynolds can't get him to do it,
I think he'll be in it.
Honestly, only Disney could bring that. Make that work, and then somehow fit Deadpool into it, and somehow make it all work. Because Deadpool really works in its own universe, but to try to make it work within the MCU would be one of the most exciting things, I think, for any fan of Marvel. And then, you know, I would love Deadpool being like a huge role and somehow making the multiverse work and bringing in the.
I think Deadpool is going to be a huge part of the MCU going forward. I think they're trying to get everything right. Ryan Reynolds obviously owns that role. He loves that role. He's still going to be, he's probably going to be one of the only characters from the Fox universe that's going to transition fully into the MCU. And, you know, they'll make some joke about it. There's actually a new rumor that there's going to, he's also going to have an animated show coming out as Deadpool that he's going to be the voice of, that's going to be on Hulu. And the fact that it's going on Hulu will, it will be more adult, which is awesome. Yeah,
that'll be awesome. I'll watch the heck out of that. It's just so much news over the last couple of weeks, which just means maybe things are starting to get back on track here. Maybe people, you know, are, we're going to start production on a lot of these movies. Things are, you know, the industry is reigniting. And we've got an exciting end of the year in 2022 and beyond to look forward to, and hopefully a little bit of a return to normalcy after the chaos of the last year.
Which, though, real quick, too, sorry, another thing I want to bring up, there has been just so much news, and we will get to the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, but what about Oscar Isaac as Moon Knight and that footage that leaked of him training? That show is going to be awesome.
That's some John Wick type shit right there.
Yeah, that's going to be epic.
You know why I love that? You know why I love that? Practical stunt work, you know, and the actor themselves
doing
the work, doing the choreography. Oscar Isaac, love him as an actor, love him as a person. I like Oscar Isaac.
So do I. Everything he's done.
I've been a fan of his. So I became a fan of his in 2011 when Drive came out with Ryan Gosling. Yep. And I was like, who is this guy? He's going to be like a supporting actor. He's going to be like a big star. And, you know, I was a little bit late to the game. He had already done a few things, but what his career has done, he picks and chooses the right roles. They're all good. Even the small roles that no one knows about. If you haven't seen 10-Year Reunion, it's him, it's Channing Tatum, Jenna Dewan, like all these people. And it's like a really little known film. And he sings in it. He plays the guitar. It's one of my favorite songs from that movie. And not a lot of people have seen it. But just Oscar Isaac as Moon Knight, great casting per usual in the MCU. But watching him do it, I'm like, I don't know much about Moon Knight, to be honest, and I feel like awkward saying that as a comic fan and a nerd. I feel like I'm betraying my kind, but I didn't know. I know a lot now because I did a ton of research.
Yeah,
on it.
He's basically, I mean, not to get into the whole Moon Knight thing, but I like to compare him. He's kind of the Batman of Marvel. I know some people, I feel like more like some people say Tony Stark is, but that's more. I feel like the Tony Stark is like the Bruce Wayne, where the Moon Knight character is like the Batman.
Yeah, that's a fair. You and I had this conversation. Yeah. But for me, Oscar Isaac already doing the training, already showing that he's got a knack for, you know, John Wick level intense stunt work. I can't wait for that show now. Which that show, I was like, okay, could be cool. I love Oscar Isaac. Might be interested. Now I'm like, put it on tomorrow. Like, I need it. Which means they're probably starting to film very soon. Do you know when the start of production is?
They haven't announced that yet. I think it's the, because he actually hasn't officially been announced.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely is. Like, when they did the Disney Plus big meeting where they announced all their new projects, Moon Knight got announced, but I'm pretty sure She-Hulk is starting to film right now. Miss Marvel is probably on its way pretty deep into production as well as Hawkeye. So I think they're all going to come out before Moon Knight. So that's going to be the last of the shows I think that have been announced.
Wow. Okay.
So we got a little bit of ways, but I mean, they're pumping the shit out of these shows. I mean, there's going to be a point where you're always going to be having at least a Marvel or Star Wars property on Disney Plus week in, week out.
They do a really good job at kind of concealing as they're producing. And then all of a sudden you find out like it wrapped, like Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I saw set photos. I didn't even know they had started filming, like, which is another exciting thing we have to look forward to next year. So Loki's coming out. That trailer
dropped. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of stuff.
There's so much stuff. The Black Widow. There's a ton of stuff on Black Widow. The Loki trailer dropped.
I think Loki could end up being the best of the three Marvel shows that have come out so far when that comes out, in my opinion. I thought that looked incredible. I love Tom Hiddleston. I think he is amazing as Loki. That character is so, I mean, he has a huge fan following, but I want to say even underrated. Like, he is such a great anti-hero / villain. He's amazing.
Right. Like, that's what Marvel's so good at. Like, these villains you actually start like rooting for, right?
Yeah.
Whereas like when you watch, you know, in DC, for example, like, yeah, you might like Heath Ledger as the Joker, or Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker. You're not rooting for them. You're just enjoying their performance. Whereas Loki, you're like, ah, yeah, he did a bunch of bad stuff, but like, you want him to win and you're rooting for him and you want him to succeed in what he does, and he's redeemed himself in certain circumstances, and he's just really fun to watch. And the way he's made that role his own, honestly, if he didn't do such a great job, they probably wouldn't have. He wasn't in the bigger plans in the beginning, let's be honest.
Exactly. Yep.
And so that's called stepping up to the plate, owning your role, and to the point where Tom Hiddleston, they were even saying that, hey, he should be the next Bond. Like, I mean, they're trying to make him like a star outside in the MCU. He's done a lot of good stuff, but he's in a Jaguar commercial that I constantly watch and smile because he talks about being the villain in the car and, you know, anyway.
It's funny. I think he could be a Bond, actually. Like, I could. He'd be like kind of a take between a Pierce Bronson type Bond and what we have with Daniel Craig. I think he'd be a good mix.
Yeah, he'd bring the charm to a new level. Maybe not as much grit and as Daniel Craig, or not as rough.
He can never do that, but
he can do class like no other. And, it'd be interesting, but
we also got the new Indiana Jones.
Yes.
We can't miss Indiana Jones.
So. I don't care if Harrison Ford is in a walker. Okay. I will watch Indiana Jones over and over and over again. They can make 10 more. I don't care. I don't care if it's him limping through and it's a little like, even the last one, it was almost certainly tough in certain areas. It's like, okay, they would have caught up to you by now because he's like hobbling along, but who cares? That's freaking Indiana Jones. Harrison Ford, by far and away, my idol. Growing up between being Han Solo and Indiana Jones, I'm desperate to know what they're gonna get into. Like, what is his adventure? What is he?
Question
going
is for? So the other big casting announcement was Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who she's a really hot commodity in Hollywood these days. Do you think she is a villain? Do you think she's a sidekick of sort, or do you think they are setting her up, which I would not like, but it seems like it's a Lucasfilm way these days to be the new hero of the rebooted franchise?
I think the latter. I think that they are being very clear. Spielberg has been clear. Harrison Ford has been clear. There will never be another Indiana Jones. And they've said it over and over and over again. And no matter how many of us have fantasized about Chris Pratt taking on the role, or it, you know, the hat being passed on, They're probably going to want to do like a spin-off series where it focuses on a woman, a badass woman that was initially his sidekick. And you know what? I love Harrison Ford is Indiana Jones. There are certain things that you can do over and over again. You could do Bond over and over again, and everyone will have their fresh take. You could do Batman over and over again, and everyone will have their fresh take. But there are certain roles you just don't touch. And I kind of think Indiana Jones is that, because Harrison Ford is just a icon. And I'm okay with them expanding the universe without replacing him.
I agree. I really just wish Shia LaBeouf wasn't insane and he could have just continued in the series. I'm a pretty big fan of hers. She's a big comedic presence. I just don't really see her becoming this new action hero, because I know they're not going to replace Indy, but I don't see her leading this action franchise. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting, and maybe it'll just be kind of a one and done kind of thing. Like Shia LaBeouf, something works or it doesn't, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You know, I kind of got excited about the prospect of Shia LaBeouf because I loved him leading the Transformers trilogy. I thought he had star power. And yeah, if he wasn't so bad shit crazy.
He was rumored heavily to be Moon Knight. And like Marvel wanted him in a property. And then, I mean, we don't need to get in that, but he's done. He's officially done.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah, so there's a ton of news we can keep going into. Yeah. I think over the next couple sessions, we've got a lot more, actually. There's just so much in the airwaves right now and exciting stuff. And obviously, we nerd out about this stuff. We could probably talk about it for 4 more hours. But let's get into the episode. There's 2 to cover. They work together really well, and it's almost like one big episode. Actually, these 4 episodes have been like one big movie to date, it gets better and better. You want to do a quick recap of episode 3 and 4 of Falcon Winter Soldier?
Yeah, we'll go with that now. And Matt, why don't you give it a go?
You're gonna put me on this is your segment.
I've been going on and on with the news. I'm like, let's let Matt get a little bit.
All right. So between the 2 episodes, we had at the end of episode 2, we had the big reveal and cliffhanger where they were going to go see Zemo. Right. And yep. So we basically kick off the episode we had a lot of predictions of what would unfold. And we'll get into each of those as we unfold what happens in the episodes. You predicted, they break him out. They don't get anyone's help. Actually, Bucky comes up with an elaborate plan to break Zemo out of prison because they need his help to figure out how the super soldier serum has been utilized by the main antagonist this far in the show. Super soldiers are back. Zemo says, okay, you think Hydra's part of it. I know where to start, right? And he takes them on this big kind of mission, much to Sam's dismay. Sam was very upset about trying to break Zemo out. He was yelling at Bucky. Bucky was like, hypothetically, if I were to do this, we could get him out. They go through this whole sequence, and then next thing you know, it wasn't hypothetical. Zemo's there. And there's all sorts of banter. It's really funny. And they're off to the in the comic books. Nerds have known this in the X-Men universe, but they head over to Madripoor to go find out where super soldier serum got produced. There's a couple of references to remind me what the name is of the.
Well, they're going to look for the power broker.
The power broker. Yes, yep. Sorry. So they're looking for the power broker. They head to Madripoor. They go undercover. They dress Sam up as like a pimp, which they get into how that's super stereotypical. And there's some funny back and forth with them. And then we get the new cultural phenomenon movement, which is Dancing Zemo, trying to fit in a crowd in a bar in Madripoor, and not too dissimilar from Release the Snyder Cut, do we get the release the extended dance for Zemo, which took what,
a week hours? Instead of a few years. Marvel gives the fans what they want,
which is great. But in their quest, they have to pretend that the Winter Soldier is still the Winter Soldier, that Bucky is still under brainwash, and they basically offer up Bucky as the Winter Soldier as collateral for information to get to the power broker. And so you kind of see Bucky kicking some ass, super soldier, which is really cool. And you can also see that he's still got the I guess undercover chops to pretend that he's the Winter Soldier, which was really cool scene. And then they get led down this path to go find the doctor that's producing the super soldier serum. They also get saved by our favorite Sharon Carter, who just turns out to be a badass living in Madripoor, who what Marvel does such a good job at, what the MCU does such a good job at, is not forgetting about these character arcs. And so us as fans, we forget. Okay. Yeah. So at the end of Civil War, they're fugitives, right? They are on the run. And while, you know, through the Avengers movies and through Steve Rogers and Sam and Bucky, they all got their pardons, they're all back assimilated into society, but we never found out what happened to Sharon Carter. So we find out that Sharon Carter is still on the run. She has been basically banned from the US, and has utilized her skills as a super secret agent to basically get an incredible access to all sorts of antique artifacts and all sorts of other things to keep herself in power, to sell things to on the black market and have access to information. So they end up using Sharon's help in their quest to get closer to Carly and ultimately the super soldier serum. She ends up fighting off like 20 dudes, awesome action sequences, as Zemo goes off the handle and starts shooting people and doing whatever the hell he wants as he's a free walking around man. What else happens then?
Well, Matt, let me stop you right there for a second. Let's just talk a little bit about Sharon. So what is your opinion on, you know, how she's living so large in Madripoor? How is she, does she have all those artifacts? How does she know where everything is?
Are you saying she's the power broker?
I think she's the power broker. I think she is not so good anymore. Not to her fault. She's, like you said, you forget, like, she has been on the run. She makes a comment to, you know, Sam and Bucky, like, hey, everyone forgave you guys. Like, you're the Avengers, but not me. I haven't seen my family. They don't know where I'm at. And she's living undercover for the past, you know, it's been 5 to 6 years for her. So I don't think that's a coincidence. And that's just,
well, what Marvel has done so well is they, when they do create villains, they ground them in reality, that the villains didn't just become super villains by nature. The world made them that way. right? And so in the, where I actually think that's a possibility, even though it would break my heart because I love Sharon, I think that, yeah, she's been away for 6 years trying to survive. Her survival instinct has led her down this path of, you know, gaining power, gaining significance in a world where she can't go back home. And honestly, she makes a few comments that make you realize what her headspace is. Like, you guys still believe in the idea of heroes. You guys still believe in the stars and stripes, and you know, it's all basically, it's all a bunch of crap. And you're like, whoa, she's gotten cynical. But again, what Marvel does so well, the world makes you into that villain. You didn't make yourself into one. So if she becomes a power broker, if she isn't so good, we'll see. But on the other front, we don't truly know if the power broker is bad either. Who knows what the power broker's intentions are with this whole thing?
We don't, but that's to assume that, you know, do you think the Super Soldier Serum is something that should be being produced and is good, or it shouldn't be existing at all? I mean, that's like one thing that we'll get on to, and it plays an even bigger part in the next episode. But like, Zemo is totally a hater of the serum. I mean, that goes back to Civil War. Like, he does not think anyone should be given that God gifted power. And kind of, you know, we're, before we started just talking about Sharon, like, she leads the team to that, like, storage, secret storage locker that happens to have the guy in there who's making the serum. Right. And I just found it a little fishy. Like, she knows where that is, led them right to it. And then, you know, make a long story short, Sam and Bucky are trying to get some information out of this guy. And Zemo just loses his shit and he just shoots him point blank. Hey. Like, he doesn't care. Like, I'm loving him so far in the show. Like, I expected him, like you said earlier, to kind of team up with them, but he definitely has a bigger role than I thought he was going to have. And I, so far, he's stealing, every time he's on screen, he's stealing the show for me. He's been amazing. We'll obviously get more to that for the next episode, but.
Well, even in this one, right? So you find out a lot more about Zemo, like his background. He's rich. He's got his own Alfred. He's like, he's like Batman, you know. He's got his like private jet. He's got his butler. He's got all these homes and access to all this, you know.
It goes back to you saying too, like, Marvel makes you like their villains. Like,
yeah,
I'm like loving this dude. Like, I'm happy they broke him out to, right, you know, help them. Well,
and you understand him a little bit, right? That's what they do good too. It's like, you don't agree, but you understand. And that's actually a direct quote from the latest episode where, like, Sam was talking to Carly in the Flag Smashers. And he's like, I can't speak for millions of people, but I understand you. Like, I get what you're trying to do, but you're doing it the wrong way. Well, same thing as the audience. I don't like the way you did it. I don't agree with your approach, but I understand. Right. You were, in your mind, a victim. And the way he thinks about things, you know, he's had the opportunity to take the Super Soldier Serum, for example, and make himself powerful. But he thinks supremacy is a bad thing. Right. Villain thinks supremacy is a bad thing. Right. Which has its own connotations on how this whole show is, you know, portraying a lot of things. And Zemo just, like you said, every scene he's in, he's stealing it. What did he say about Marvin Gaye?
I don't remember.
He was like, he really captured the feelings of African American culture. And then Sam was like, okay, you have no right to say that, but but you're right.
Yeah.
But so many beautiful hysterical moments with him. But like, yeah, he's on borrowed time right now. So, you know, I guess before we transition to episode four, you know, end of episode three, you know, Bucky ends up in an alleyway, and basically we get our next cameo from the Black Panther world, and you get that, like every other episode, cliffhanger at the end.
Yep.
Only we didn't get that in episode
we
four.
We did it.
But you get the Black Panther theme.
You get
music,
IO.
You get the chills. You get the whole bit. So that basically at the end of that episode, you now know they're on his tail. They're gonna come get him, and that basically. Bucky's like, hey, we need him right now. And they're like, well, you're on borrowed time, cause he's ours. And so that gets you into episode four.
And for people who don't remember, so they're out for Zemo because he's responsible for the death of T'Challa's father, who was the Black Panther before, T'Challa took it over because he died. So they've been out for blood for this guy forever because he's caused massive chaos. But one thing too, before we transition to the next episode, another big thing that happened towards the end, which is why I also go with Sharon being bad, is the moment she kind of she parts ways with Sam, Bucky, and Zemo. She makes a phone call to someone and then gets picked up in like a shady car and is basically like, we have a problem on our hands. That leads me to believe that she is the power broker.
Okay.
But that was just the other big thing. So
could be.
But yeah.
But I think, you know, what I guess, episode three, before we get into episode four, as an overall episode, felt like a filler.
Yes.
What would you rank it?
So out of the first three episodes, I would say it was the weakest of the three. But once again, not because I loved it. I've loved every episode so far. It just did feel like a filler. The action was great, seeing, you know, Sharon kick ass, but it didn't have that huge action scene. I'd like the callback to showing that, you know, the X-Men universe could be coming into play finally, since Disney owns that property when they bought 20th Century Fox. But I'd give it I've gotten pretty high remarks for the last two. I'd give this episode like a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I think that's a fair one because it had some, I guess, iconic moments. I mean, Dancing Zemo made the whole damn episode. It was a great transition for episode four. It was the building blocks for episode four in a way that it fed into it really nicely. Yeah, Sharon's fight sequence was awesome. It shows that she's not someone to be messed with, and really makes her up into, you know, a iconic villain. And then, you know, again, you come in at the end, you bring in, who doesn't love Black Panther? You bring in Io and the Dora Milaje, and you've got yourself some excitement to look forward to with, okay, what does this mean? How does this all tie in? How does this play a role in the overall extended MCU? Obviously, you're bringing all these characters in. Is it going to feed itself into Black Panther 2? How's it all going to start coming together? Episode four starts to build on that. So I will give my review as well. Episode three, I'd say, was a 6.8. Just because I like to be more cynical than you.
A lot of people have been saying, like, I mean, I have the Marvel goggles on. I just love everything they do. But there has been some criticism that this show has been slow. Like, I don't necessarily see that, but at the same time, I guess I could see why some people are saying that. But did you agree?
I don't think it's slow. I think it's the right amount of buildup. But I also know what's coming, you know, like, exactly. You can't tell me the last two episodes aren't going to be insane. Episode one was great. We've gotten a great fight sequence or two in every single episode. And frankly, episode three was necessary to build out the story, expand the world, introduce Madripoor, bring in Sharon, get Zemo's character development out there, start to expand this world of Super Soldier Serum, how it's still relevant, how they have access to it. And everyone's, it starts to build out everyone's, mindset as it relates to supremacy or Super Soldier Serum and things like that, which plays a huge role in episode four, which I'll read the book backwards. Episode four, I thought was a 10 out of 10. So
it was incredible, in my opinion.
Yeah, perfect episode. So I'll summarize that and I'll let you fill in because, I'm blending the two together and I'm doing a poor job at
it's all good.
As single episode, but
this is one big movie at the end of the day.
It really is. Episode four, you kind of back into the Flag Smashers, and the being on their tail. You've got John Walker is back as a huge role in this episode. He's douche. On their tail. What?
Douche.
Yeah, flaming bag of douche. But you've got basically he's always one step behind Bucky and Sam, but he's like either following them or just on their trail. But he's always showing up at like all the wrong moments, and he's you see that he is struggling with the fact that no one's recognizing him as an authority figure. Isn't living up to the Captain America mantle, right? And throughout the episode, you just start to see that start to weigh on his conscience a bit. Like, I'm not a super soldier. I'm a step behind. These guys don't even listen to me. This, and you start to see it weigh on his conscience quite a bit. And then basically, it really starts to dive into the psyche of the Flag Smashers as well. So you start to get an idea of they're this, you know, disenfranchised group of people that feel like they represent the new, and it's very relevant to society today. But they represent they basically get into how Captain America was a symbol of like being a perfect citizen and like a outstanding human being. And that's not, the world is ugly and it doesn't allow you to be perfectly good, and that you have to be rough around the edges, and that they need a new icon to look up to, someone like Carly who looks like them, who acts like them, who has been through the rough periods of time. And so it kind of gets into like, who are our heroes? Can everyone be a hero without turning into a villain? And what is right and wrong? What is the greater good? So you start to get, you build around that and how the Flag Smashers are thinking as a group, organized group, and that they don't see themselves as villains at all. And you get into some really good moments between Sam and Carly where he starts to express, like, I understand what you're trying to accomplish. You're trying to make your voices heard as, you know, a minority, as someone that feels that they haven't been given, dealt the right hand in life, but you're going about it wrong. You could see he's really appealing to Carly in some way, and she takes almost a liking to him or a softness for him. But in that very scene, so basically what I rushed into it, basically what happens is Sam and Bucky are on the trail of the Flag Smashers. They figure out where the funeral is of a mentor to Carly and someone that she was very close to. So they're like planning to show up at this funeral and capture Carly and whoever else in the Flag Smashers that they can. Captain America, John Walker, wants to just go right in and light stuff up. Sam and Bucky want to be more strategic with it and let Sam kind of talk to her, try to get on her level, and kind of not voluntarily turn herself in, but, you know, get on her level. And this is when you start to see something brewing.
Yeah.
Something brewing in John Walker where he's getting very impatient. You see him pacing. And he's like, you know, my way or the highway, starts to lose his mind. You know, essentially, as Sam is finally getting through to Carly, John Walker gets impatient, runs in, starts saying, "You're under arrest." She thinks it's a big setup, turns into this big fight scene. Just another classic example of John Walker messing things up, right?
Can't forget though how they found where the funeral was. We got to backtrack a little bit of that because of good old Zemo.
Good old Zemo getting down with the Turkish delights,
being real creepy with all the Flag Smasher kitties. Where Sam and Bucky can't get any information from anyone, he decides to go to all the refugee children, throws out that Turkish delight. Lures them all in like the creepy dude out of a van with candy, and they tell him immediately. I thought that scene was amazing. It was hilarious. It was like creepy. It was dark. It was perfectly acted. And there was, once again, Zemo was helping them, but doing it his way, because, you know, he has his own agenda, but like he's working with the heroes because he knows he's going to get his way and help them too. I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, he does do a brilliant job. He plays like a really good, you know, seductive villain that can basically seduce anyone into, you know, acting at his will, right? So he gets the information in the least likely way possible by getting the information from children who trust him right off the bat. They want his freaking Turkish delights, which, another comedic relief moment for him. And leading up to that, you basically... Bucky and Sam basically tell him like what I told you: you're on borrowed time. The Dora Milaje is coming after you, and it's only a matter of time before they catch up and you get your reckoning. And he doesn't seem, you know, all that concerned. He just kind of meanders through life. He's like, yeah, I'm walking. I'm out of prison. I'm doing what I got to do. He's enjoying himself. He's coming out of the steam room like he's. Just nonchalant, zero F's, and it's really he's killing the role. He's doing such a good job. That's how they find out where the funeral is. And then ultimately John Walker messes it up, which then leads to Zemo actually shoots Carly, right?
Yep.
Shoots Carly. She's a super soldier, so she runs away, ends up being able to heal.
Corners her on his own. He's with nobody else when he does that,
right? Nobody else. He catches up to her, shoots her, and then finds the hidden stash of the remaining, or as of right now, the last remaining to the world super soldier serum. And he starts destroying all of it. As he's destroying it, John Walker runs in and he basically sees him and Zemo, basically they have their own confrontation. He wants to put him under arrest a whole bit. But as Zemo kind of walks away, John notices that one vial,
of course,
is not destroyed, of the super soldier serum, and he looks at it and you get this whole, You know what vibe it gave me?
What vibe?
It gave me the vibes from Lord of the Rings when when Bilbo is like, why shouldn't I take it? You know, and he like puts it in his pocket like with the ring. Again, nerd, we can get to all nerd universe here. But basically he looks at it and he's like, well, why shouldn't I have it? I'm gonna put it in my pocket. hides it and doesn't say anything, but then it turns into a conversation. And you get two sides of the story. So you get Bucky asking Sam, I believe it was, what if you had a chance to take the super soldier serum, would you? Was it Bucky or was it?
And he and he tells him basically like no.
Yeah, basically no way. I would never take it. I don't want it. But then conversely, you've got John Walker and his sidekick,
Battlestar.
and having the same conversation. And Battlestar really had a huge role in this episode because you find out that he is way more the angel on the shoulder, the, you know, supportive sidekick, friend, confidant that, you know, sees the best in John.
He is his ride or die, like
ride or die. And he's like, and he looks up to John. He's like, John, you are the perfect soldier. You have medals of honor. You have done all of this great stuff. And he said, of course I would take the super soldier serum. You know, it just makes you more of what you are. And we're both good people. We have good intentions. Look at what we've done as soldiers. Interestingly enough, John was like, but look at the bad things we had to do those good or to get those good deeds resolved. And it was interesting to see, because we obviously love to hate John Walker. Everyone loves to hate John Walker, but it's like he recognizes in that moment, it's like, I'm not all good. But then his sidekick kind of furthers it like, no, you are with, if he basically hits home with him where he's like, think about how many more lives we could have saved.
Yeah. They reminisce about being at war and like, yeah, their lives would have been so much better.
And so you start to see John Walker, you know, John Walker, regardless of what his faults are, his intentions are pure. He wants to be the best Captain America he can be. He feels inadequate. And he feels like if I had this super soldier serum, I could save more lives and be greater and live up to Steve's shoes, basically, is how he feels. Anyway, that ultimately, they end up back on the path of the Flag Smashers. And there's a, well, before that, actually, yeah. There's like a big, how do I pronounce it? Dormilash. Yeah. Dormilash show up. They're coming for Zemo, and there's a big confrontation of, you know, with Bucky and Sam, like, we're taking him, and they're, like, trying to stop them. There's a little bit of a fight sequence, and then John Walker comes in. He's trying to take control of the situation. He's like, I'm Captain America, and they're like, we don't give a shit.
Yeah,
and they he's
kick
like,
his well, ass.
Yeah, they beat the living crap out of him, and he sits there in defeat. And he looks at his partner and he goes, they weren't even super soldiers. And that's when it clicked.
That's the turning point.
That was the turning point when he snapped and was like, I am inadequate. And ultimately leads to the big reveal at the end of the episode, which we'll get into. But in that sequence, you also find out that, you know, the Dormilaje, they basically trained Bucky. They took out his brainwash and made him the White Wolf.
Yeah, that's how the episode started, which the episode was just so good. That, though, was a really – I really enjoyed that part of the episode. It was, one, you learned something that we haven't known, that Io, actually, she's the one who – you know, unbrainwashed him. And I get the vibe. I don't know about you. I don't know if there's a little bit of a love interest going on there. Like, they clearly have history. Or I'm also thinking maybe he had something with Shuri, T'Challa's sister. Yeah. I think that's going to come into play, even if it's not in this series, later on. But he clearly has a much bigger connection with her and just Wakanda in general. I know that's where we had last seen him before the Infinity War and Endgame, but there's definitely unfinished business, and he feels that he is part of that tribe, in my opinion.
He does. But because they know him so well, because they gave him his bionic arm, they like completely decapitate him, remove his arm with ease, and he just sits there in shock. Like, and even Sam goes, "Did you know that they could do that?" And he was "No." So, Dora Milaje, badass, unstoppable. I mean, come on, they're from Wakanda. You wouldn't expect any different, but they operate under no jurisdiction. They do what they want when they want. But yeah, that scene where, all right, so Sebastian Stan is a phenomenal actor. I can say that out loud now. That scene where he becomes free, his mind is free. That is some of the greatest redemption stories, character arcs, and impeccably acted by Sebastian Stan. He's just so broken and so happy at the same time. The emotion in that scene is so powerful. But yeah, you could sense that, okay, there's this huge loyalty there. There's a bigger backstory. There's a huge connection, and he does feel like he's part of their tribe. It's probably where he feels the most at home, to be honest. He even made mention to it earlier in the series, where the only calm he ever felt was in Wakanda. I hope he plays a bigger role, you know, when Black Panther 2 comes out and some other things. I think that'd be a great character arc and see more. I would love a love interest with Shuri. I think that would be great, actually.
Yeah, me too.
So we'll see how that works out. We'll see if she even maybe, they say there's going to be big cameos in the last two episodes. Yes. Now, some of them are supposed to be new characters, but I also hope maybe Shuri comes out. You know, maybe you get some more Wakandans, which would be really great.
Word on the street is next episode we'll have a brand new, never before seen Marvel character in the MCU, played by a big actor/actress. That's the rumor on the street.
Never before in the MCU is
correct.
Specific.
Correct.
Okay. So you made a bold prediction, which has kept me up at night,
which I'm now going back and forth with, but I still would love it, which was Wolverine. Supposedly.
Because of Madripoor.
I think that plays into it. I think this is a good series to bring him in. He fits within this, you know, world. Everyone's clamoring for it. I don't think I think the way X-Men characters are going to work in the MCU in the beginning is they're just going to sprinkle them in. It's not going to just be, an X-Men movie. They've been done. It's kind of just like how when Kevin Feige was in charge of Spider-Man, he didn't continue with the same old tropes of like Uncle Ben. He just started, you know, right into the thick of things, made a few changes. I don't know if Wolverine's too big to just drop in like that. It's like what I'm hoping for, but that's what I've been hearing and reading. It's like fans are going to be, it's going to be like the, oh my God moment. I can't believe they just did that. Holy shit. But
who do you think would play him?
There's been rumors that, oh my God, I'm drawing a blank. Carl Urban is Wolverine, which to me would be amazing. Like, I would love that.
All right. Well, hold on. Because first off, John Walker has too much Homelander vibes to then bring in another The Boys freaking character into this.
The only thing is Carl Urban technically already is in the MCU, but he played such a small role in Thor Ragnarok that it didn't even really necessarily look like him. Like, I think it doesn't matter, but he has been a rumored person.
He'd be a good Wolverine.
He'd be amazing. They may end up going with an unknown, though. I mean, a guy like a Tom Holland at the time, I mean, he basically for the most part was unknown. I mean, he had work, he'd been in big things, but I feel like they may go with an actor more like that and make them a household name.
Now, do you think, so I had always had this theory that they were going to bring X-Men into the fold through the multiverse, but are you thinking it's more of, hey, X-Men isn't like this whole world of mutants, but instead they make each of their mutations work as part of the story and not like there's this great world of mutants versus regular humans?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I feel they're going to have to figure out a creative way to be like, why haven't there been mutants in the MCU? I do think Doctor Strange is going, and the Multiverse of Madness is going to probably open up those doors. I mean, because technically Wanda is a mutant in the MCU. She hasn't been.
Right.
Well, that WandaVision kind of started to unravel where maybe she is. I feel like they're going to have to backtrack on that one because, I mean, she is Magneto's daughter. So, but they may just totally... I've heard rumors that they're going to totally change the origin story of Magneto, kind of make him a more current. I've heard Denzel Washington could be rumored to be Magneto. So kind of playing
awesome Magneto.
That card instead of, you know, the whole Holocaust of it. I mean, yeah, I think that'd be great, but I really don't know how they're going to introduce mutants yet.
But, you know, you bring up a good point where it fits into this world. And I mean, if they wanted to just make it less about, you know, you could really tie it into all the experiments with Hydra. It could be like, you know, super soldier serum gone extreme and you created this mutant.
You could also just drop Logan in there and like, you know who he is, but the fans know who he is, but you're not going to get more explanation about him. They could find a way to throw in an important mutant in the story without having to explain all of the background until later on, in my opinion.
If you had freaking Wolverine facing off against like Bucky, I'd lose my mind.
So would I. Wolverine, it's just funny. Wolverine's always been one of my favorite characters. And like, I've just hated that he hasn't been able to be in like the MCU. We can go on all day. Like to me, they're just in another league of the comic book movies, in my opinion. Even like, I love the original, probably like first two X-Men, but now like they don't hold up in my opinion.
Well,
the actors do, but.
I love X2 and I love Logan.
I love Logan. At least, I mean, that holds up because that's not that old of a movie. It's crazy to think how old the original X-Men movie is and how long Hugh Jackman played that role.
Yeah. Because I thought Logan was the perfect farewell to that character and as Hugh Jackman in that role. And I'm okay with him riding off. Now he did the role for two decades basically, but I don't know if they're gonna do that big of a drop in this. I would love it. Well, I don't know anymore because, you know, shit, look at the drop they did in Mandalorian. No one expected that. So okay,
exactly, you know. And I go back and forth though, because when we last had talked, I was on the Wolverine train, but now I'm like, you know what, once again, they can't do anything to really disappoint me, but I also, it could end up just being this character that's never been in anything, that is just a new character. And it's like, unless you're like a Marvel sweaty, you're not even going to know who it is, which could be possible as well.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. They're going to do something big. And, you know, end of this episode wasn't even a big reveal. Like I had the prediction that every episode you'd have a big reveal. And so we didn't have.
I told you wouldn't.
Yeah, I think every other episode there's gonna be a big reveal, and you technically had a reveal of John Walker turning from good cap to bad cap. So to kind of tie everything together, after basically Carly threatened Sam's family, Sam has another meeting with her to basically say, back off my family. She's like, I would never actually hurt them. Again, they're trying to have a meeting of the minds. John Walker shows up, screws everything up again. He starts fighting everyone. You start realizing that, holy crap, this guy is throwing people. He's kicking people through walls. He's throwing the shield at speeds that are inhuman.
He like bends a pipe in front of Sam, and Sam's like, what the hell?
What did you do?
Yeah.
What did you do? And ultimately what happens is Battlestar gets basically surrounded, knocked unconscious, and John Walker's like, I got to go save him. But ultimately in the battle, you ultimately see that the super soldiers are too strong for a mere human, and they kill accidentally, but they kill Battlestar. Now, here's the thing. Everybody stops fighting when he dies, which, again, there's conflict, but these people are not trying. It's weird. They're bad.
Carly's an interesting character to me. I really like her because she has an interesting moral compass. Like, she thinks what she's doing is good. It's clearly not. And like you said, everyone stopped. But at the end of the day, I don't think she's losing sleep over her and her team killing him. Like, I don't think she cares. She's down to have anyone die that gets in their way.
Right. Agreed. And so anyway, they all stop fighting. They're all like, oh my God, what happened? And then, you know, John checks his pulse, realizes he's dead, and he snaps. Right. And so they're all chasing down Carly and her cronies and all the Flag Smashers. And basically John Walker runs through a wall, catches up with the number two to Carly. I don't know the character's name.
I don't remember either, but he does that too. He jumps through and does like that Steve Rogers, like jump onto the ground too, which was kind of like homage in my opinion.
Oh yeah. That's exactly what it was. And what's interesting is this character earlier in the episode said, I looked up to Captain America. He was basically like, I idolized him, but we need a new captain. We need someone else to look up to, someone that's not perfect, someone that's not Steve Rogers, right? And that was ultimately the guy to face the wrath of a John Walker with a super soldier serum that is on revenge. So John Walker ends up losing his cool, beating this guy to a bloody pulp as he keeps saying, it wasn't me, it wasn't me. Takes the shield and decapitates the man in front of a group of watchers, a big group of people with their cell phones out, filming the whole situation. And it creates this really eerie scene that even Boss Logic did a poster of, but you see the shield with basically blood and guts on it.
It was pretty dark for Marvel, in my opinion. I mean,
yeah,
it was very, it was disturbing.
It was very disturbing. But basically, you now know we've confirmed your suspicions. John Walker is going to be the main villain for the last two episodes. He is definitely on the outs. He is not Steve Rogers. He has faults, and the whole world now knows that Captain America is not this perfect symbol. He basically tarnishes the mantle, which is, I think, what plays a role in how Bucky and Sam get the shield. Very, very graphic, very, very dark. And it's going to probably set the stage for a dramatic, following two episodes. only other things to point out that are going to, I think, play a role in the next two episodes. You keep talking about the power broker being Sharon. She has access to satellites and all sorts of other crazy stuff. She's got a lot. So it's starting to build. You're starting to think, okay, what is her role in all this? They keep mentioning the power broker. Carly's mentioning the power broker. Who is it? What is their role? Is it Sharon? You're probably right. So
I think, unfortunately, she is no good.
But obviously a lot to unpack with that. A lot of great moments, huge action sequences, and amazing character development. But I guess throughout the two episodes, who's living up to the mantle? Who deserves the shield?
I think I'm going to go back now to Sam. I really think that he now knows he made a mistake of giving up the shield. I think the pressure, like how I had talked when we first started this podcast, he didn't think he could handle it. Now he has shown, I mean, just even the way he talked to Carly, to try to relate to her. I mean, he even brings up how he used to, you know, help talk to veterans to, you know, deal through their shit. He knows now that the symbol is important, and it now John just tarnished it, and that's not cool. And he is ready to take over that symbol the way he should have from the very beginning. Like, I still don't think I get why he made his decision to not do it immediately, but now he, I think, feels like he deserves it and can do great by being the new Captain America.
I think that's a good point. I think what we're learning is that they've made multiple mentions, and I'm going to go in two different directions here, but I have beliefs in two areas that kind of conflict with one another. I think they can head in two different directions, but they keep making reference to even Zemo said it. There will never be another Steve Rogers. There is no, there was only one Steve Rogers. He's one of a kind, right? And they made reference to it multiple times throughout when they were talking about the serum, its effect on people, how it amplifies who they are, and that, you know, everybody has imperfections that the serum can take hold of. And so that's why everyone's like, I'm afraid to take it. I don't think it, you know, it's Sam being a good person. You actually probably think Sam probably should take the serum because he is genuinely good. Right. And maybe they'll find a way to do that. Who knows? But I noticed something that I wanted to bring up because they keep saying there'll never be another Steve. There's no one like Steve, but that the serum didn't corrupt in some way. But they take for granted that Bucky took the super soldier serum and he was corrupted not because of the serum. He was corrupted because of Hydra and they brainwashed him. So they had to brainwash him to make him into the Winter Soldier and the bad guy. So, but ever since getting unbrainwashed and reversing everything that Hydra did to him to torture him and do everything that they did to his mind, him getting out of that in Wakanda, he's still a super soldier. He has the serum, and guess what? It hasn't corrupted him. He's actually a genuinely good human and he's doing the right thing. And he has constraints and he knows where the line is. So I disagree that there's no such thing as Steve Rogers. I think Bucky is a prime example of the serum getting done right. And I wonder if they use that to feed this idea that maybe Sam can be a super soldier. Maybe Sam can be the next Captain America if they recover serum, however they make it work. Like, look, it worked on me. It could work on you. You're a better version of me. And he takes on the mantle. I think that could be one thing. or the other is that they agree that Captain America as an idea is too big for one man. And it's got to be the two of them together sharing the mantle. Falcon and Winter Soldier, Captain America, the duo.
I love that idea. I just don't see that happening. I think this, the more that the series has gone on, Bucky's future is in the Black Panther, Wakanda of it all. I think he will go off as the quote unquote White Wolf. And as much as I love Bucky, I don't think he has it in him anymore to be Captain America. It's just not in his personality. Like, not that I don't think he's a great guy, not that I don't think he wants what's best for everyone. It just more fits Sam and what Sam's about.
Yeah, fair.
I do like your idea as well, realizing other people can take that serum if they're good and it's not going to affect them.
Yeah. So we'll see how it plays out. I think the serum isn't completely gone yet. I think that John Walker is going to be a threat. I think there's something more within this power broker world, and maybe there's even more in the works. I wonder how it all plays out. I actually don't have a lot of theories, whereas before I felt like, all right, and we've been getting pretty good at our predictions, right? Most of our predictions have come true. The only type of theory I have going forward at this point is, you know, you have the one about Sharon. I think Zemo is going to be a martyr. I think Zemo is going to choose to do the right thing.
Agreed.
And he's going to end up going out a hero. He's going to die a hero. And that'll be really, they've set his arc up to make him so likable as a villain. I think what he's going to do is sacrifice himself somehow, saving, I don't know. I don't want to go. I don't want to get, but I think in the eyes of the Wakandans, he might be slightly redeemed as a result. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to go too deep down that, because I like the idea of he's a martyr and whoever he protects, I win on that prediction rather than getting super specific with it.
Yeah. I think you'll win on that. I think you'll win on that prediction. They haven't made him as likable as they have just to turn that around and make him the ultimate villain again. Like, he is definitely going to go out, in my opinion as well, saving somebody and redeeming. And then besides the Sharon prediction, I mean, like I said, I think Bucky is going to go off in back to Wakanda. I think that's how we'll leave him in the series. Sam becomes a new Captain America. And I also think Carly will be redeemed as the with the Flag Smashers. She'll ultimately realize what she's doing is wrong to a certain extent, because she's going to see. I think this all leads into John being like the big villain, that he is just insane. And he's going to just start going on a rampage. And I think it's going to open up her eyes to maybe what she's doing is wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair. And maybe her mission is solved by this symbol becoming corrupted.
It could be, yeah.
You know what I mean? Where she's like, wait, so, you know, I exposed, you know, a hero. I made him an anti-hero. I was the reason for that. And maybe she feels fulfilled and does, you know, her arc ends in some sort of helping out way. I don't know.
Did you have any, like, gripes with the episode? One thing that I was a little disappointed by, I don't like that John took the serum off camera. I was a little disappointed in that. Were you like, did that bother you? Or like, I just remember that obviously the scene when like, you know, it's administered to Steve in the original Captain America, which is kind of cool. I thought it was a good opportunity to have just a cool scene. I mean, I guess it saved time. You didn't need it, but at the same time, I know they implied, obviously, you knew he was going to take it when he took the vial, but I just thought it was a missed opportunity to do it off screen.
Well, that's my, you know, it's funny because I always, you know, and maybe I missed it. Maybe it was a small part of like the Winter Soldier's backstory or something, but like maybe they enhanced the serum. But like when they first, you know, when Steve first took it, it was more than just, hey, I took this vial and sipped on it and then became a super soldier. Like, yeah, he was in the machine. He got like, he grew.
Yeah.
His muscles grew. Everything grew. Everyone else just takes it and all of a sudden they could throw people across the room, but their physical appearance doesn't change. Like, I'm just like, how does that, it just seems weird that they just ignored that with all these super soldiers. So, you know, maybe they didn't want to do the, everybody looks like Steve Rogers, all, you know, thin and frail and small and also becomes beefy. But I mean, that's kind of the point. So I think that's kind of strange. I don't have too many gripes. I'll be honest with you. I gave it a 10 out of 10. I think there was so much in it. There was so many good sequences from the opening with White Wolf to, you know, Sam's interactions, or Sam showing his like, I guess, instead of fighting, like, I'm a lover, not a fighter approach. Like, I can understand you. I can get on your level, making him more like Steve, more Captain America. You know, sometimes you can talk it out before fighting unless you have to. And then I love the Zemo story arc and his Turkish delight scenes, which were hilarious. There was just so much. I don't have.
It was really a great episode.
I just liked about the episode, and I love the way it ended. I mean, it's just like, here's the symbol.
It was a great ending.
And
it's funny. One thing I actually
released a trailer.
Oh yeah, the tease for the last two episodes looks really good. No, one thing I was going to say was I had also read this week that they actually had to do some major changes to the story because the original, I think, plot for the Flag Smashers was to release a deadly pandemic virus to the world.
That's what he remember when Bucky went on the train, he's like, there's a bunch of vaccines or whatever.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that. It's kind of like they figured out to keep that scene in. And because I've been thinking a little bit, until I read that, I probably wouldn't have thought this way, but their whole agenda just seems pretty bland. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't bother me, but when I read that, I was like, oh wow, okay. They totally changed. I think a lot of their backstories has been cut from the show.
Yeah, that's fair. And it makes sense. I think they've had to do that in a few movies where it was, you know, a little bit too close to home and they're changing the story a bit. So, yeah. And honestly, just the first scene I thought about when you said that was when he made reference to vaccines or medicine or what, I was like, well, that's just a little close to home right now. How did they predict that? So, yeah, makes sense. But yeah, then they released the teaser for the last two episodes. It looks like it's gonna be jam packed with action, and we're gonna see a showdown between Bucky, Sam, and John Walker. And Bucky might, you know what? Maybe he's not Steve Rogers. Bucky might go off the handle.
Yeah, I think Bucky is gonna go apeshit.
I mean, that last sequence you said to me, like, Bucky's going to kill him, because he was like, he was like, you guys don't want to do this. And he's like, yes, we do. He's going, oh, shit. You know, and who doesn't want to see, you know, Bucky in action just kicking ass? Super soldier versus super soldier. Let's go.
Exactly, because that's just going to be the interesting thing. Can like Sam, I mean, it's an unfair advantage, even though Sam's been kicking ass throughout all of the Avengers movies against, you know, aliens, wizards, and what was the other one of the big three?
Androids.
Oh, yeah, androids.
The big three. Yeah. All right. Well, you think he deserves the shield? I personally, I mean, if we could give a villain the shield, I'd say Zemo, because he's stealing all the episodes. But I'm going to go on the other side of the spectrum and give it to Bucky. I think his character arc is really compelling for me right now. I thought Sam in the first kind of two episodes was stealing the thunder, but I feel like Bucky is starting to become, you know, this center in the show where he's connecting everything, you know, with the Wakandans, with Sam, with the super soldier impact and all this stuff. And I just, I feel like he's really growing into his own, knows his place, knows what his purpose is, what's right and wrong. He's loyal to the right people. So he takes the shield for me in episode 3 and 4. And I'm very upset that I gave an honorable mention to John Walker in episode 2. Fuck that.
Yeah, I mean, I was disappointed when you did that, Matt, but at least now you've seen the light.
I have seen the light. I have not seen the lightsaber just yet, but hopefully we'll get a peek into that in the next couple months here with Disney.
I'm hoping May the 4th, some big Star Wars news.
That would be good. But if they release the lightsaber without doing it with Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen, I'll be really upset, because this is a prime opportunity for marketing.
It is. I don't think we're seeing that until life gets back to pretty normal as well, to get that in the theme parks and whatnot. I think the new hotel is going to open up next year, and that it'll be then. So I think that was, they teased that lightsaber a little too soon, but maybe that was also genius as well.
Yeah. Well, if anyone's going to own it, it's going to be Matt the Jedi Meister. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and so will Darth Fisher the Wise.
Oh, you did it, didn't you? Darth Fisher the Wise. Oh, my God. I don't know. I don't know yet. We're going to have to. Well, good. That means I get the blue saber. You get the red one. We gotta switch up this logo.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Darth Fisher the Wise. What are you, Darth Plagueis?
Yes.
Love it. I like it. That's a good one. All right. Well, we did a lot on this one, I think.
Another great episode.
It was a phenomenal episode. Yeah. Two phenomenal episodes in one. And I don't care. We are going to talk nerd news for an hour next time if we have to, because there's so much going on in the nerdverse. And it's super fun to talk with you about it. So,
agreed, man.
With that being said, we are signing off, Matt the Jedi Meister and
Charles the Wise.
Okay, that's a good way to end it.
Hey, everyone.